Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to On Point. I'm your co-host, Don Allen, with my other co-host in Studio B, Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. And Mr. Edwards, how are you doing today?
Donald, can't complain. Kind of watching the weather here. It's awful quiet. You know, when it gets quiet like this here in the Midwest, that's sometimes a signal of possible tornadoes, dark, overcast, rainy-looking sky, kind of off and on. But it's so quiet. It's that kind of eerie quiet that I've seen on a couple of occasions when I've been here and tornadoes have come through. And, of course, we're getting a nice little draft of rain right now. But I guess everything is under control. We're getting ready to – are we going to be having that endorsement for mayor here, Don? What are you seeing there on the screen?
Well, I am seeing some messages by candidate Gary Schiff, and I did reply to one of the messages because I have not gotten an update for our people down there at the convention. So – they might be in the middle of it, and I said, you know, don't call us unless there's an endorsement, for sure, absolutely. So the silence is kind of reminiscent to the silence of Juneteenth, which is going on today mysteriously somehow with no advertising out in the Underground Railroad along the Mississippi River, right outside.
Well,
of
John, I'm looking out of Studio B, and, of course, they're being rained on again right now. It's coming down kind of heavily up towards that area, if you will, right there along the Mississippi, there in the woods with the mosquitoes. Mm-hmm. Five years ago, the attendance at Juneteenth here in Minneapolis was over 35,000.
Yes, sir.
Yeah,
yes, sir.
Over 35,000. Last year was something like about 1,100, maybe. The anticipated number this year is probably less than 500. And so conservatives here and city council and others had maintained that it was too much of a problem for the gathering of black people to celebrate a national holiday in the regards of what it meant, the end of slavery, as family found out in and noted in Texas. But 35,000 just 5 years ago, Donald, and now probably less than 500. Yeah. In fact, you can't even really get down in there. Don, I'm getting some feedback on my voice here. Maybe we just clean that up.
Okay, that should be better.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm still hearing myself. But anyway, we'll clean it up. And Don, a night of real violence here in downtown Minneapolis last night. Yeah. A lot of violence. We had shootings in front of the soundbar, and we had shootings in front of Sex World, and then an African American was found laying in the middle of 8th and Hennepin, which is the prime street for those in places like Philadelphia and Chicago and Detroit, Kansas City, and places like that, you know, where you got your big thoroughfares. Found an African American just laying in the middle of the street. He had been shot over in the 5th Precinct, which is in South Minneapolis, and somebody took and dumped him in the middle of the street in downtown Minneapolis. So we had at least 4 or 5 victims. 15-year-old girl, by the way, shot in front of Sex World. We don't know how much of a major gun battle inside of the sound bar. And then just around the corner and one block up the street, Peachalucci's again. Third time in 5 days.
Wow. And you know
Minneapolis
what?
Police officers have been called to Peachalucci's for violence. The last two times people have been shot, and et cetera, either right in the doorway or inside. In fact, a couple days ago, we had a gunman open fire. A former police officer, the wife of the former Inspector Mike Martin, who was armed and should have returned fire, declined to engage, if you will. Everybody got to ducking and dodging. Police officers pursuing the shooter, not knowing that he had fired and had a weapon, because, get this, Don, No 911 call was made from inside of Pizza Lucci's in that incident last Saturday.
Wow, that's incredible. And no news reports, Mr. Edwards. I saw nothing on
yes, it did. Yes, it did, Don. Got to correct you on. Yes, it did. On Sunday, the media did actually show Pizza Lucci's and et cetera, because that was the second incident at that point within 36 hours, but there's not been any real. Now, on last night, you're absolutely correct, no report. And by the way, it was an African-American police officer who faced off with the gunman right there at the light rail station there, right on Hennepin, busiest part of downtown last night. An African-American police officer faced off with the gunman and disarmed the gunman.
Wow. Wow, incredible.
Now, you would think that as much as we are, you know, into, we love our police, that there would have been some identification of this officer, but he is the son of a law enforcement Minneapolis police officer who is not very well liked by the chief and others, though he's well respected in the community. But yeah, it was quite a standoff, according to witnesses, as this officer faced down a gunman who had just shot up the street just, you know, three blocks down the street. I'm telling you, it was wild downtown last night. But what the heck, you know, we're at peace with ourselves and everything is going well, right?
Everything's fine. Everything's perfect around here. Our beloved Shangri-La, as you put it, Mr. Edwards.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah.
So, and we, of course, we got the convention and, grand jury. The Franklin case has gone to the grand jury as we reported last week. It was sent over to Mike Freeman. Now, there was supposed to be, I got to tell you, Don, there was supposed to be an update from the new public information officer, Cindy Burlington. But we didn't seem to get it. It was going to basically tell us that a preliminary report on the circumstances surrounding the death of Mr. Franklin were going to be forthcoming. We weren't going to be told, y'all weren't going to be told how many times he'd been shot, where he'd been shot, how many bullets overall were fired, et cetera. But I don't know, something happened. Mike Freeman, I guess, made a decision that it wouldn't be appropriate to tell that, and that, you know, in another 3 or 4 months, the matter will be going to a grand jury, I guess. I guess it'll get to there. Maybe 6 months, though. So these are some things that just trying to keep our listening audiences domestically and internationally up to speed on, because, boy, it's kind of like the Viking Stadium. The people aren't talking about that. You know what I'm saying? So.
No, they
are. Now, by
are
the way,
not
there. Anything on the People's Stadium?
Well, the People's Stadium, there's been a lot going on, Mr. Edwards, this week as it relates to compliance, workforce, and also equity at some point. And we know that yesterday or earlier this week, and I just want to pull it up in the studio here so that we can, it was reported by NPR and other sources that they have hired a equity director to diversify workforce. And this is a man who works for the Minnesota Department of Civil Rights and has taken the challenge of going ahead and making sure that, you know, there's
now, excuse me, Don, just a minute, for a minute. It was the Minnesota Department of Human, or was it the Minnesota Department of Transportation?
He works for the Minnesota Department of Transportation.
Yes. Okay.
His name is Mr. Alex Tittle.
Okay.
Mr. Edwards, I know
African-American?
African-American male, professional.
Okay.
Served in the Army 10 years, did transportation work for the military, went to college in South Carolina, and he's also a son of an Army vet, just to throw that extra information in there.
Okay. Patriotism.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. And he joined MnDOT as deputy director recently, and he's now the interim director for the Office of the Civil Rights at MnDOT. And so he
was the position held by the very powerful Mary Prescott, who was quietly let out, forced out, just 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, laterally moved, actually.
Huh?
I think she was laterally moved out of
I mean, it's not like we're going to fire her over falsifying information about the employment numbers for African Americans. I mean, it's not like that's that important, but it was an embarrassment. Oh, it had to do with the audit information that we talked about on these programs just last Saturday. And then Prescott was moved out. So Mr. Tittle is now the Well, wait a minute now. He's the acting director pending his appointment as the equity director for the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority,
well,
right?
Well, yeah, there's two things going on. He's the interim director at MnDOT, Civil Rights Department, and he has been named hired as the equity director to diversify workforce for the People's Stadium. So in one, in one he's pending, and the other one he's locked in, the stadium he's locked in. But, you know, you had mentioned earlier, Mr. Edwards, about the audit and the kind of information that, you know, is troubling that would come from MnDOT, which would throw every number from the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights to the State Department of Human Rights and their falsification and combobulation of numbers. Based on this, it's really traumatic and chaotic, and I'm really surprised that none of the mainstream media has even picked up any piece of this and ran with it. You know, they had a meeting on Thursday here in Woodbury, if I'm not mistaken. And
at Global University, that was it. And I got to tell you, for our listening audience, if you will, and for those that will be coming back on demand and listening to the program, it got so ugly out there that they almost came to blows in the room. And what happened was, get this now, and this guy does a tour of duty like you're in the military. Robert Woods, who had been ousted as the director of the so-called Minority Contractors Association of Minnesota, has been returned to that position a month ago. And so he comes in on behalf of the Minnesota Department of Transportation as a representative of their interest, along with a Caucasian high-ranking official of MnDOT. And they basically tell the people that are gathered, and I mean, man, you know, out there in Woodbury at this meeting at Global University, they had some of the heavy hitters of our community. And they were out there telling these folks that everything had been corrected, everything was okay, there had been some mistakes, you Negroes didn't get any money. Too bad, but, you know, things are corrected now. And I guess a activist by the name of Alfred Flowers confronted the authenticity of the information. And let me tell you what they do. We've got quite an advantage here in studio. In fact, I'm looking at my copy right now, so if anyone has any questions. They would not give them copies of the audit.
Oh, bad people. Not good.
Bad people. Bad people. They would not get the representative of DOT, along with Mr. Woods, had a single sheet of paper, and he said, "These are the talking points that we'll talk to you about." You know,
and go ahead, Mr. Woods. Go ahead, please.
Go ahead, Mr. Allen. Go right ahead.
No, I just wanted to get page three, Mr. Edwards, of that audit tells the whole.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And it's
you must have wrote in your own numbers, Don, because it's the damnedest audit I ever saw. They forgot to put the numbers on the pages, but go ahead.
Yeah, and then, I had it. I had to number it myself. Yes, you're absolutely correct about that. But this is something that, and we need to, since we're talking about the audit and how heinous this audit is, I want to start with the years 2010 and 2011, which the audit
sure.
is actually talking about, okay? And we're going to get... We're going to get kind of embedded in this a little bit. The percentage of dollars given to DBEs in 2010, according to the, I'm not reading anything, the Minnesota Department of Transportation was 5.6. Now, I just took that off the audit, okay? In 2011, they said that the percentage of dollars given to DBEs rose to 7.6%, okay? Now.
Absolutely.
And now
right above, we have concluded.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah,
now I have to turn to the letter that I have obtained from Daryl Turner, Division Administrator of the Federal Highway Administration, Minnesota Division, dated May 26, 2011, which says, it's from Mary Prescott, and it says, regarding disadvantaged business enterprise, semi-annual report for first half of 2011 fiscal year. In that report, Ms. Prescott says that there was an increase from 5.6% to 7.6% for the percentage of dollars going to minorities. And the actual payments on contract completed during this period was 3.1%. Okay, then I have to call our attention to, again, page 3 of the audit, which reads, and I'm not making this up, we have concluded these participation rates are unsubstantiated. The audit asks for documents or calculations to support the claims, and for some reason the information or calculations were not retained. An attempt to recalculate the rates have proved unsuccessful. We are unable to verify these rates and draw a conclusion from the information and documentation provided. We request the numbers and percentage for 2012. No documents were received. Now let's stop there. Let's go back to the document that was sent along with the May 26, 2011 report to the Federal Highway Administration, Minnesota Division, the administrator, Mr. Daryl Turner, where that report shows, which I have right in front of me, that actual payments on contract were $166,736,686. Again, $166 million.
Uh-huh.
Okay? DBE awards during this period, a breakdown by ethnicity and gender. And let's go over this. I'm a black American, one contractor, $715. I did not make a mistake. I said one contractor, $715. Okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Hispanic.
Now let me just say this, cut in on this, Mr. Allen, again, for our new listeners and et cetera. This exact information was first reported by this program in a telephone interview with a man by the name of Lenny Chisholm, who is a whistleblower in this entire situation. He gave that exact number. And I have to remind you, Mr. Allen, that a number of civil rights leaders, and particularly ministers, circulated the information that we had made that statement up, that was absolutely incorrect. And, in fact,
exactly.
For the last 2 years, we have been under attack for talking about that and repeating that number over the air on this blog radio program. Now there's nothing but silence. And I'll go into one of the things that happened at the meeting at Global University Thursday morning. But go ahead.
Okay, and let's go down. One Native American contractor received $4,800. That's $4,800. Hispanic American, 13 contractors or contracts received a total of $492,000. One Asian contractor received $66,000. Asian Pacific American, there were four of those, received $444,000. Non-minority women, there were three, received $4 million, $4,166,000. And the total was 73 contracts. So with that said, I mean, there were serious concerns going on about these numbers, because if these calculations for the goals and what Ms. Prescott and MnDOT was putting out there was incorrect, you know, these numbers will tell the story right there that, you know, they by no means increased any participation with the DBEs, nor did they increase pay with the DBEs.
Well, but here's the question we have to answer, and maybe even answer, Mr. Allen. Many of our leaders were on the advisory committee to DOT.
Yes,
and
they
in fact,
were.
Many of them were in the room Thursday morning at Globe University as they were being required to get their minds right, with the exception of the gentleman, Alfred Flowers. I'm bothered by that. Maybe some of them can call in. They know who they are. Some of them, at least one of them, used to call in back in 2011 and tell us that we were not correct about what we were saying. You know who I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe they can call in and give us a better understanding of why the following statement was made at quote-unquote page 3, which raises serious legal questions. Another concern with the rates above, and this is the 5.6 basis, 7.6 that Mr. Allen talked about. Another concern with the rates above is the fact that second-tier DBE subcontractors are not monitored. Audit found several examples of potential wrongdoing in this area. Now, what that wrongdoing meant is that there was a falsification of numbers and et cetera, as was pointed out by Mr. Lenny Chisholm on this program and concurred with back in 2011, not 2012 or 2013, but way back in 2011. And, of course, I definitely concurred, because I had been saying that for 6 or 7 years in my column with the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder. But again, these same individuals, these same leaders that are serving on the advisory committee to the Department of Transportation and helped aid and abet the wrongdoing, said that we were totally and absolutely incorrect. Now, the white folks, you know, the ones that did the audit, now the
yeah, they did.
And so I guess this authenticates it now, right?
Yes, yes, yes. This is absolutely a scandal. And for those individuals, and like you said, they know who they are. They ought to be ashamed of themselves sitting at the table with their hands out. Because in particular, this just came back today. I'm actually getting a text now, Mr. Edwards, about this, and I just need to share this with you. One of those individuals that would listen to us and call us that runs the organization in North Minneapolis was asked if he would be able to put together 10 or 20 of his best graduates and start an LLC. And his response to the people at MnDOT was that, you know, he doesn't have any funding to do that, which is another hook on a worm out there trying to get some more funding into a sinkhole that has really not many success stories. So,
my. This ties in then with a exclusive report both on this program and on my television program here in the Twin Cities that airs every Sunday and has been for the last 24 years. I reported, Mr. Allen, that and repeated it on this program in just a kind of a brief overview, that at one point Kevin Lindsay, the commissioner of the State Human Rights Department, had been attempting to satisfy a serious problem involving our beloved Capitol building, which is under restoration work and et cetera. And what happened, a company, big white construction company out of Kansas City, Missouri, called J.E. Dunn, had received a letter of noncompliance from Commissioner Lindsay about the fact that they were not meeting their goals. And in the category of African Americans, the goals were 000. And so what happened, Mr. Lindsay thought that one of our organizations in Minneapolis on the north side had developed and trained a group of workers that could do the specialty work that has to be done on our state capitol rotunda and et cetera. And he went in February of this year to meet with this leader, and lo and behold, the leader could not produce one single individual who would meet the criteria for being hired.
No, he couldn't.
He did not have there were no workers that had any journeyman hours. They were all basically still apprentices or had not worked since they had left the program. And Lindsay was admonished by the governor's representatives because of the embarrassment. There was an article, for those that want to say we're naysayers, there was an article about 8 weeks ago in the Minneapolis Star Tribune, Johannesburg Times, which went to great lengths to point out that this had happened, and then the story point out that there are no African Americans currently residing in the state of Minnesota that can do that kind of work, which means they can't do the work on the Viking football stadium either. They don't have the skills. I hate to say that. I'm just devastated as a longtime watchdog, if you will, that I have to say that. But, you know. But go ahead, because we're getting that feedback again. So someone calling? Someone texting?
And in the queue, that's why I went back in to just check on them. I'm sorry. Mr. Edwards, that was very interesting, you know, that report about the state capitol. And, you know, they had no, marble cutters or anybody that can do that?
None of the specialty workers that would work on the restoration of a building of that design and structural material structure, if you will. And you're right, marble cutters, terrazzo, and stuff like that. As I had reported 2 years ago, after the report was given to Velma Corvell and the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, that we had so many categories of specialty construction work that had no African Americans in it whatsoever, and everybody pretended they couldn't understand why this was happening. Velma Corvell, she said what she always says about us. Don, she said I was a liar. Just was a liar and making stuff up.
Well, Mr. Edwards, since you bring up Velma Corvell, Don't you think that somewhere in the deep recesses of City Hall, someone is baking her a cake, as they put it, when they escort people out the door, as far as all this craziness that's been going on down there?
Well, she is in a tenuous position as we speak, and it has to do with the fact that her department was not selected to be, quote-unquote, the contractor, though Mr. Tittle will come under pressure from some of our leaders and from Ms. Corvell and from Ms. Wanda Kirkpatrick of the Metropolitan Council to contract with their agencies and hire some of these individuals as friends, girlfriends, boyfriends, or whatever, to work as specialists and monitors on the stadium. Mr. Tittle will be under pressure to do that. I do believe that the gentleman we talked about on last week's program, who is the director of contract compliance for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, may not be around much longer in that position. He had been entrusted with the negotiations with the Sports Facility Authority and the Minnesota Vikings to fill the void, if you will. In other words, get the contract, do the monitoring, put the fix in, falsify the information, documentation, as they did at the Department of Transportation. He didn't come through, if you will. And word late Friday from sources inside Minneapolis City Council, which also had been told that a windfall of as much as $800,000, Mr. Allen, was going to be coming to the city, was not coming. And the council has demanded a explanation on what's happening. So there's going to be some chairs moving around. That's all I can say at this point.
Yeah, and then speaking of the of MnDOT, we also, Mr. Edwards, this is my personal opinion, I think we need to take a closer look at the Minneapolis Economic Development Corporation, which is MEDA is the acronym for Minneapolis Economic Development Corporation, and what their mission is in the Twin Cities to assist minority contractors. And I would even go as far as saying that we need to look at them from 2008 to 2012 and find out who they actually helped get contracts. How many of those were African American, white women?
Well,
Asian,
they helped themselves get contracts. I have to differ. Their role is not to help African Americans. That's what all I'm concerned with. Their role is to make sure that African Americans are not helped nor allowed access.
And
I mean, that's the role of MEDA.
We have a caller also. So.
Oh, let's get the caller. Yeah.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I am calling in. I have been listening to the show, and I'm rather disturbed by what the codes or whatever the talking about someone not being able to bring forth qualified workers in the state of Minnesota, where we have a lot of our in North Minneapolis. I would say if this person represents, you know, say that they represent North Minneapolis, we have a lot of people here that are unemployed. I think we're number one in the nation. And so I'm disappointed to hear that this person who would go around, I'm assuming, is the one that says that the best form of a job is a social service program, is a job. I wonder there was some guy, he was kind of heavy set with a big belly. You know, I don't know his name, but, you know, this guy, I was wondering, do these people, since they're not able to get a job at the stadium, do they have to go on these social programs? And is that same person willing to stand in front of the state capitol and fight for jobs for the people in this state?
I think your question is an extremely valid one. Here's the problem. The person that you're talking about and their organization has received over $10 million over the last 10 years to train African Americans to be able to meet all of the requirements and prerequisites of getting these jobs that need those skills. And I would think that after the system, if you will, be it the federal government, state government, has made a $10 million investment in our community, that we would be able to produce. But I repeat what I said on this program earlier. In the early part of this year, as an outgrowth of a challenge by a company out of Kansas City, Missouri, who was working on the state capitol, which said, unfortunately, we can find no African Americans who meet the requisite skills. And lo and behold, the commissioner of our beloved state human rights department went and met with the gentleman that I think that you're talking about, if you will, with the big tummy. And that gentleman and his organization was not able to produce one single worker qualified to go on the site at our beloved state capitol. And you have to understand, this was happening while our leaders were walking around at the state capitol talking about equality, and all you had to do was look up at the ceiling at those scaffolds and et cetera. Wasn't nothing but white folks working.
Well, I asked for that person to stand down if he's not able to follow through with what he promised to provide jobs for the people in this state. He needs to be replaced, and that's all I want to say.
Thank you, madam. Thank you, miss.
Thank you.
Ooh.
Yeah, and, you know,
ooh.
I have, thank you. And you know, Ms. Ayers, I have to agree with her on this because we are at a crucial turning point, for lack of a better explanation, but I will explain it. Because right now, you know, those people, those individuals that we speak of, and we don't use their name, we're not going to attack them personally. We're going to go after the organizations if we ever decide to. But people know who they are already. You know, it's now at a point where we have to deal with them in public discourse, where if they say they have a plan to get people jobs on the stadium, well, I know that we are in a position to say, let's see that plan on paper. Show me how it will translate from your mind to that piece of paper to people getting jobs. That has not come up yet. That pressure has been put on, but they have not produced anything.
Well, let me cut in, Mr. Allen, because both you and I were at a meeting in January, a very cold January evening in the latter part of January. We were at the Halsey Hall room at the Metrodome Stadium. And there was a presentation being made. In fact, that's where we were later called and identified as liars until Gary Schiff was provided with a copy of the video of Velma Corvell making that statement. But we were in that meeting. I would like to do the following, Mr. Allen, because I believe you must always come up with solutions. And the young lady that just called kind of laid a challenge to all of us. I'd like to see Mr. Tittle, as soon as he hits the ground running, and so he's officially in position, I'd like to see him hold a similar meeting. The staff, led by Ted Mondale, can convey to him what happened. In fact, maybe Mr. Tittle was even in that meeting that day. I don't know him. I know you do. I would like to suggest that as soon as possible, even before the 4th of July, that Mr. Tittle convene, and let's say in that same room there at the Halsey Hall room at the Metrodome, in which later that site will hold the beautiful new $1 billion People's Stadium. I would like to encourage Mr. Tittle to hold a meeting and to ask those who maintain that they have the warm bodies to put to work on the Viking Stadium, that they make a formal presentation laying out their plan, laying out the timeline, and identifying in writing to Mr. Tittle and to the Vikings and specifically the Sports Facility Authority, the names of these workers, so that Mr. Tittle can then pair those names off against information which would indicate that these individuals, these African Americans, are qualified and ready to be hired. Now, I have to tell you that the Kansas City group that we first announced their existence and who had been in negotiations with the Vikings for about 3 months, gentlemen of the round table, over 100 African-Americans out of Kansas City, Missouri, who do have the credentials, and that has been agreed upon by both them and the Vikings and the Sports Facility Authority. But I would like to see the individuals you just identified, Mr. Allen. I fully concur as a liberal with my conservative colleague that we have a meeting presided over by Mr. Tittle, if you will, and that these individuals who have been saying for the last year, we got the bodies and et cetera, and we're going to bring them in and they're ready to go to work, that they be required to indicate what their plan is. And they be able and be required to identify the workers that they have ready to go to work on this stadium when ground is broke officially in March of next year. I just think that's the way to do things, Mr. Allen.
I think that is the way to do things. That makes a lot of sense, Mr. Edwards. And our phone lines are wide open. Our number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Give us a call. Let's comment on what we've been talking about or a topic that, you know, you are feeling pretty good about, and we'll move on from there. Mr. Edwards, one thing I wanted to talk about earlier in the week in our production meeting, and not to change tilt too much, but we had talked about Mr. Snowden. Now, some people are calling him an American hero.
I call him an American hero. I stand by my statement in the production meeting and on my television program. He is an American hero. He has exposed Big Brother, 1984 version, if you will, George Orwell. I think he has called attention to a very disturbing pattern that is in existence in the United States and has happened under all administrations, including President Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Bill Clinton, George Bush, as far back as, you know, in fact, I'll show you how far this goes back. This goes all the way back to when a man by the name of Palmer was the Attorney General of the United States in 1920, yep. And he hired a young guy by the name of J. Edgar Hoover to head up what was then called the Bureau of Investigations, later to become the Federal Bureau of Investigations. Man, they've been spying on people, and they've been spying on black folk for so long. In fact, one of the first people at the top of the list back in 1920 was the father. Understand what I'm saying to you, Mr. Allen, was the father of the late Martin Luther King Jr., who himself, his father, was assassinated as an outgrowth of this surveillance. And so what Mr. Snowden did, I think, was patriotic. I call him an American patriot, an American hero. God bless him that he did what he did. And now everyone's going to have to pay the piper.
Exactly. And I'm holding in front of me in Studio A, Mr. Edwards, the book by Kenneth O'Reilly that was edited by David Gallen called Black Americans, the FBI Files. It talks about all the African Americans that were profiled and investigated. James Baldwin, W.E.B. Du Bois, Medgar Evers, Martin Luther King Jr., Adam Clayton Powell Jr., Paul Robeson, Bayard Rustin, and Malcolm X, and many more. The book is in print now, and I'm telling you, Mr. Edwards, you would just be shocked.
No, I wouldn't, Mr. Allen,
because
we did a number of critiques of this as young Negro insurgents in the 1960s. In fact, this is where the book, The Man Who Cried I Am, came from. With regards to this kind of, and I've said it numerous times on my television program, is that it was Adam Clayton Powell in the 1960s that alerted black America, just like Snowden and Daniel Ellsberg before him, but Daniel Ellsberg after Adam Clayton Powell. It was Adam Clayton Powell Jr., the black congressman from Harlem, New York,
yes.
One of only two members in the United States House of Representatives.
Hallelujah.
In 1964 who made us aware that we were under consistent and constant surveillance.
Exactly. And so with that said, I mean, I'm reading several stories, you know, on the wire coming across the AP, and there are hardcore Republicans to the right that are saying that he could possibly be a traitor. The libertarians, the Ron Paul people, saying that he's a patriot by exposing this. And so, and then there's some on the left saying that he should be assassinated. And
that would be the intention, except the only problem is that's going to be hard to do if the Chinese government, which apparently they have, my sources tell me over the last 72 hours, the Chinese have clearly sent the signal that they intend to afford him the necessary shelter, if you will, or what is called officially and diplomatically is asylum, if you will. And so it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Mr. Snowden, and it's going to be interesting to see how much more information, because, see, he took voluminous files and documents and et cetera. Let me just say this to you, Mr. Allen, and to our listening audience around the world. It was no accident that Mr. Snowden was stationed in what is one of the most sensitive eavesdropping centers in our quote-unquote intelligence network, and that is Hawaii, which allows the United States better access to not only spy on the Chinese, but to hack into Chinese computer systems. Same thing the Chinese are doing to the United States. I repeat that again. Mr. Snowden was specifically, because apparently this is a brilliant young man who, by the way, didn't even finish high school, yet is being paid $200,000 as a special technician, specialty technician, for, and by the way, isn't it amazing that the company he worked for is one of America's private companies, which means the conservatives and others have been passing that money around, haven't they?
Exactly. Hey, you're right on point.
He works, even though he still carries CIA clearance, his contract, his check comes from a private American corporation.
Wow.
But he was still the spy master in Hawaii, spying on, intercepting, and hacking into Chinese and other governments. We even hacked into our Japanese friends, Taiwanese friends, Vietnam, Indonesia, Malaysia, I mean, you know, Philippines. We just spy on everybody. Now we're upset because they're spying on us, and now we're upset because a patriotic American exposed what this country is. We're hypocrites. I mean, this country is really a hypocrite. We're just a bunch of hypocrites, man.
Yeah.
But what else do we get? But the call phones lines are wide open, if you will, for any kind of discussion.
And that number is 347-426-3904. Again, 347-426-3904. And Mr. Edwards, we have to go back in the direction of civil rights and the Civil Rights Department of Minneapolis. But before we actually take that path, we have to give an update on David Cornelius Smith, the young man who less than 2 weeks ago. His family was awarded some money. The lawyers actually received more of the $3 million.
But it was still $3 million. That's right. They received $1.95 million, and his family received $1.1 million. But they still had to pay. The city of Minneapolis, listening to Velma Corvell, had to pay out over $3 million. But go ahead. You had a question on that.
Yeah, well, I had a statement, and we had talked about this earlier this week, and I just want to give our listeners an exclusive and a heads up as far as the procedures and policies of the city of Minneapolis and the Civil Rights Department. Don't you know, Mr. Edwards, that after the Hennepin County, or the coroner, Mr. Baker, Dr. Baker, ruled David Cornelius Smith a death, a homicide, that the city of Minneapolis hired an independent coroner from Massachusetts, and
pathologist.
This information
absolutely correct. Uh-huh.
Yeah, this information was given to me by the former head of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and he says, "Who does that? Who actually goes against their own city or county coroner's determination? Because this is ridiculous." So, besides the $3 million, I'm pretty sure that coroner's report from Massachusetts cost a pretty penny, cost the city taxpayers a pretty penny also. And this is something that we should be aware of. But, you know, Mr. Edwards, I was doling around in the civil rights website, and I knew there were
what
more.
What website? Do they have a website, Don?
It's a little piece of, you know, whatever they want to call it there. And, you know, I was really concerned about the history of the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights and the different people that might have been there, and someone that, you know, might have left a legacy there or something that we can go by, or, you know, some historical aspect to why the Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights is what it is today, which is nothing. And
nothing,
so
right.
With that said, I know that you're the historian and you would know about this. Can you enlighten me at any sense, sir?
Well, to our listening audience, in our production meeting earlier in the week, I shared with my much younger colleague, a piece of history and how saddened I was, because periodically the older members in my age group, I'm 74 years of age, and we talk in terms of how much history has been lost, written off, you know, stelted away, and how much disrespect is shown to us as African Americans by other immigrant groups who come here and think that we did not fight a battle. 3 years ago, Mr. Allen and I jointly sent a communique to Velma Corvell, the current civil rights director for the Minneapolis Civil Rights Department, asking for an immediate investigation into the death of both David Cornelius Smith and Quincy Smith, two African Americans killed by police in this city about 9 months apart. Ms. Corvell basically cussed us out and indicated that we were making false allegations, didn't know what we were talking about. She even lied about the fact that she was on the board of the Y. But the reason, and even Mr. Allen did not know this at that time, though I guess I apologize, Don, I kind of thought you did, because I just, you know, sometimes you assume and you shouldn't assume, but I just thought that people knew the history of a very critical piece of civil rights history in our beloved state, and it had to do with the killing of the son who was in the United States military by a police officer in Eagan, Minnesota, which is a big suburb just to the south. And in fact, as I remember talking to you, Mr. Allen, back in 2010, and I happened to mention to you the Binford Rule, and I now realize that you weren't familiar with it, and most folk in your age generation wouldn't be. But the Binford Rule was a rule that was established by those of us who took to the streets 37 years ago after Eric Binford was gunned down by a white police officer in a filling station, unarmed. Mr. Binford was unarmed. And it broke the heart of his father, who had just stepped down as civil rights director, I think, a couple years before. Mr. Allen did a heck of a job of finding the information here just a couple hours ago at a time when the city of Minneapolis carries no information whatsoever on previous directors except for Velma Corbell. And the reason for that is that a couple of years ago, a discussion took place and a decision was made to purge any history of those individuals. You get this now, both black, Hispanic, and white, because we had a Caucasian woman, Emma Hickson, was civil rights director for a while under Mayor Don Frazier, if you will. I can tell you this, though I'm going to name the two individuals. I know that Velma Corbell couldn't tell you who the first two civil rights directors were for the city of Minneapolis. Interesting enough, Miss Anthony was the first civil rights director, and the second civil rights director was the late Robert Binford, whose son was Eric Binford, who was shot and killed in 1976, if I'm not mistaken, Mr. Allen, by a white police officer. Now, the history of this was that's the closest we ever came to a white police officer being indicted for the death of an African-American in a situation in which there was significant negligence and et cetera. Do you know that Velma Corbell and her staff made a decision to purge the names of all of the former civil rights directors, including the legendary David Ramirez? You know, our Mexican and Hispanic brothers and sisters should be upset, because I doubt that they know that the third director of the Civil Rights Department was an Hispanic born here in the city of Minneapolis, David Ramirez, who was also, Mr. Allen, the founder and publisher of the very respected Hispanic paper La Voz. Okay?
Yes.
Do you know that a decision was made to purge all of those names? Now, on a personal note, as a person who served two different periods of time as chairman of the Civil Rights Commission, and in fact was at the center of great controversy in 1968, I can understand when the decision is made to purge Ron Edwards' name, because they've done the same thing with respect to my role in being the federal overseer of the Minneapolis Fire Department for 21 years. I mean, I understand that kind of disrespect and et cetera. But in the case of Mr. Binford, Robert Binford, he died with a broken heart because it was quite clear to all of us. And, I mean, we took to the streets, but you see, it was a double tragedy. And I appreciate on our own program to have the time to remind folks who have no idea. It was a double tragedy because Mr. Binford lost both his son at age 20, and he also lost his sister. His sister was the legendary and well-respected civil rights activist of the 1960s and early 70s, Martha Binford Smith. She was the aunt of Eric Binford. She died, Don, of a heart attack 2 weeks after his shot. He was shot. Eric Binford was shot because of the circumstances, the stress, and et cetera, of his murder. And so Robert Binford lost both his son and his sister to this tragedy. And the audacity of this city to purge his name and the name of others as persons who served this city with distinction and integrity and et cetera. But to do that to Robert Binford, it's outrageous. And this woman, Velma Corbell, was at the center of purging that information. And that's why my associate Mr. Allen, when he went to the website, was not able to find a single bit of information about the Civil Rights Department other than Ms. Corvell and her gang of four. That is the history, Mr. Allen, of one of the most tragic set of circumstances and events here within the civil rights community 37 years ago, my brother.
Wow.
In which a man lost both his son and 2 weeks later his sister. And though the grand jury, which had three African Americans, that's unusual up in this part of the country, and one of them, again we have history, one of them was the legendary and beloved Elmer Childers, who was on that grand jury, fought passionately, and that grand jury by one vote, failed to indict that white police officer. Elmer Childers, by the way, was the first and only African-American ever to be appointed Commissioner of Veterans Affairs in the state of Minnesota. To me, Mr. Allen, that's history. But what is being said at City Hall here in the city of Minneapolis is that Negro history, I use the word, you see, that Negro history is not relevant to anything.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. You can see that.
Yeah. And the phone lines are open. Anyone wants to question us on it, wants to challenge us about it, phone lines open.
And
call
Mr. Allen,
in.
Is there not the Aquatennial going on right now? Doesn't that go on?
No, Juneteenth's going on. Aquatennial doesn't start until, early July or something like that.
That's right. I'm thinking about, why are we – they have our folks way out by the Mississippi and what's going on downtown. Usually there's a reason for it. So,
well, the joke I heard that was told by the park board when they were putting black folks out of Glenwood and breaking the back of Juneteenth here, they said – what are the most common relationships in our city? And some white administrator at the park board said, Negroes and mosquitoes.
Wow.
Yeah. And people need to know who, of course, are not here in our beloved enclave is that where they have Juneteenth, and by the way, it's raining all over them right now as we speak. The rain is coming down torrentially. They are deep down on the banks down towards the river, probably a 200-foot drop, little bike paths and things down there. And, by the way, the police sit up top and look directly down on the African-Americans to make sure that if there's any problems that, they got a good beat on them. Oops. But they are down in the woods. In fact, you actually cannot walk. You got to take some kind of shuttle bus because it's so far back down in there in the woods. But, Juneteenth has been absolutely killed by white leadership in this city.
You know, Ms. Edwards, I went last year, and from where I had to park to get it, I was so mad. I said, I don't mind walking, but, it's not like State Fair, you pull up and you park in one of them big lots, and there's not even a big lot, and the lot they do have is filled by police officers. There's more police officers out there than there are people, usually. And so you get in there and you get the once up and down by every cop sitting there. That's the first thing you get. And there's not really a whole lot going on. And I wish they would take it up a notch because, they certainly left the Minneapolis Urban League had their family day on Plymouth and Penn. And I really don't see the difference between family day and Juneteenth.
Well, here's what happened. Because Theodore Wirth is technically inside of Golden Valley, though it's a Minneapolis Park Reserve system, the white neighbors out there had said there was just having enough of Sambos and Tar Babies, okay? And they just were tired of this one once-a-year event called Juneteenth. They were sick and tired of seeing all these Negroes and Tar Babies and et cetera up and down the streets of their communities. And so that was both Minneapolis, because actually as you walk down, you walk across the line and you're in Golden Valley. And so both municipalities and the park board and the city of Minneapolis got their heads together, and they pushed us right out of there and sent them up to Mississippi Regional Park up there, which, as I repeat again, what the statement was made by one high-ranking park board official, white official, was that what group has something definitely in common? Negroes and mosquitoes.
Wow. Again? Yeah. People, you're hearing this. Our phone lines are open, 347-426-3904. And, we welcome you to challenge, to bring up a topic, to talk about something, and then, whatever. And it's really funny, Ms. Service, because I know a lot of these folks that listen will tune in later because they're down at the DFL convention doing their thing. And I have no updates as of yet if anybody was endorsed.
I don't either.
But we will see.
And we're going just for an hour today, Don. We're closing off at 4, right?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so we'll be closed off at 4. Maybe next week, if we get an indication, we will go an hour and a half. But maybe we provided a little bit too much historical information and et cetera. I repeat again. Let me say this as we move towards the last 4.5 minutes. I would encourage Mr. Alex Tittle to convene a meeting similar to the one held by Wanda Kirkpatrick and her associate, Mr. Aaron Koske, special advisor and consultant to the Minnesota Sports Facility Authority. I would encourage him to facilitate a meeting before the 4th of July and to make inquiry and invite, because he cannot order anyone. He doesn't have that kind of statutory authority. But invite these great leaders that maintain that they have the workers and the warm bodies and the master plan and the companies and et cetera to come and give testimony. Now, by the way, the statute that yours truly makes reference to oftentimes does provide, Mr. Allen, for that scenario. And Mr. Allen, my colleague, was with me last summer when we, not at the invitation of the black leadership, in fact, they asked why Mr. Mondale and Michelle Kelm-Hagelin even bothered to meet with us, but it was a great informational meeting, I think, a great sharing of information. Mr. Allen, would you not agree?
I would.
We met with the chairwoman and the executive director of the Sports Facility Authority, and there were some discussions there, which I'm not at liberty, nor am I committed to discuss at this point, in which there were some things that they thought would be happening with respect to our black leadership.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, as providing the necessary initiative, incentive, and whatever else to make sure that, quote-unquote, their people, in other words, our people, were positioned to go to work. And so I would, again, I don't know Mr. Tittle, but I would encourage him under color of law and in the eyes of God to provide an opportunity to find out just how black folks are going to go to work on the People's Stadium.
Yep, and with that said, we'd like to thank everybody for listening to On Point. Mr. Edwards, any final words before we close off here?
No, but I'm looking forward to a significant economic surge for African Americans to be employed on the People's Stadium.